Right now it is time for the Media Beat with David Tarachuk. David joins us on a Friday. We rebroadcast this show during the weekend and also following our Monday noon news. David also has his own website, themediabeat.us. He's a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief, and we're always glad to have him in on a Friday morning. Good morning, David.
Hello there. Good to be joining you again from the media capital of the world, New York City.
You know, I was going to start off with the infrastructure deal, but the way that Joe Biden presented himself in the United States at the opening day of the G7, I'm going to switch to that topic because I think he did a great job.
It's an interesting development. Firmness at the helm, again, I think, is the message that this administration continually wants to present. And the old notion of Sleepy Joe, which the former guy described Joe Biden as, looks less and less relevant now as we see a very active commander-in-chief. And you see him in the Cornish town of Corvis Bay in southwest England, an interesting place for the G7 to meet. And interestingly, the host of the meeting, Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, saying that Biden's presence and Biden's statements and the discussions with Biden that he's had are like a breath of fresh air. And that's certainly what you get down in Cornwall on the coast. And it's a remarkable turnaround for Boris Johnson, for as you will remember, he was the one leader out, well, not the only one perhaps, but one significant leader out of all of Europe's leaders who towed it up to the former guy when the former guy was the commander-in-chief. And Trump himself, if you remember, called Boris Johnson Britain Trump, whatever that quite means. In many ways, they shared certain outlooks, and they were constantly being compared with each other when both were in power. So you've got an interesting situation now where Biden is continuing his mission of distinguishing him very firmly from the former guy in every realm, and in the realm of international relations, he's making the statement very clear, not just in words as a statement, but in actions too. Re-engaging was his word. We're determined to re-engage was his full phrase. Determined to re-engage with Europe. And of course, G7 is more than that. The G7 also includes Japan and Canada, the richest nations in the world, the most powerful nations in the world, only missing Russia, of course. It was once the G8, not G7, dropped from 8 to 7 when the majority expelled Russia for annexing Crimea from its position as an independent republic within the Ukraine back in 2014. And of course, next on Biden's agenda is to meet Putin of Russia himself next week. So this is all part of an internationalist sweep by the Biden administration, which is, I guess, there's nothing unexpected about it, but I think the forcefulness with which it's being asserted in this little Cornish seaside resort is familiar. On the other hand, we mustn't get sort of carried away. I think you'll have noticed that behind the simplistic headlines and the very cozy-looking photo opportunities, there are tensions, and maybe you might like to talk about those as well, not just the superficial appearance of a new broom sweeping through the world that held by Biden, but also the tensions that are seriously at play behind those superficial impressions.
Well, the two big tensions that I see, and one is also associated with his next meeting when Putin comes up. First of all, I think the members of the G7 and the rest of Europe, as a matter of fact, have to be convinced that the United States is not going to fall back into the America First thing. So they want to stay. They want to see a long term commitment from America to be like it used to be. But then there's the tricky, very very tricky case of Northern Ireland and its the Brexit effect.
Sure, absolutely. Both those matters are of some concern. excuse me just a second. yes, the whole question of, well, it's nice to have this new breath of fresh air. It's all well and good, but countries say, well, you know, presidential terms are 4 years, and not always, but they can be 8 years. But everyone's assuming that Biden is going to be a one-term president. We may turn out to be mistaken on that, but even so, there are inevitably, especially in Europe, where they are very conscious of pendulum swinging and the fact that they have. Amongst their own members, other examples of what I suppose would be Euro-Trumpism in say Poland and Hungary. So they're not. They don't think they're out of the woods by any means on an international plane with Joe Biden at the helm in Washington. The nervousness about can we trust America anymore? Really, after what just happened in the past 4 years, that's an inevitable feeling that has to be dealt with. And Washington's been trying its best to do that, but of course, you know, the reality is you can make no hard and fast promises given the fact that we are dealing with democracies here after all, and as we know, electorates can be fickle, electoral systems too can throw up oddities. Our own electoral system isn't necessarily going to deliver what you think it's going to deliver, and you know, the French, the Germans in particular are whispering in the corridors, and you know, they're not very soft whispers. I mean, there are very open concerns being expressed here that Biden may well be a breath of fresh air, and he may be saying all the right things and taking all sorts of very right actions. I think everyone's very on board with the idea that to fight the COVID epidemic and climate change, it's everything's going in the direction it should now. Led, and this is the kind of leadership that the world does like, most of the world does like to see from the United States. But in spite of all that, there is this niggling feeling that America has lost the trust of the rest of the world, you know, the reliability of the United States' conversion to internationalism again, or return to internationalism again, could be a transitory phenomenon. And you're right to say that the other rather more localized question is of Northern Ireland and Northern Ireland's position now in the post-Brexit world. That's a real sign of not just whispers, but outright tension, you know, tensions which have been expressed in very outright terms. And one very interesting diplomatic development before the G7 met was that America's representative in London. We don't have America does not have an ambassador as such in London right now. That position hasn't been filled yet, although it'll be a very interesting one when it is filled. But the second tier diplomat in charge, the actual chargé d'affaires is the name of the position, in charge of affairs in the absence of an ambassador, was instructed by the Biden administration, and this shows the hand of Joe Biden himself very clearly, and it was made very clear that it was a matter of personal concern, of the president himself. Biden made it clear that he was disturbed that the UK was inflaming tensions between the UK and the EU over Northern Ireland in particular, but in terms of, in general terms of trying to negotiate or almost re-litigate the treaty between the UK and the European Union, which signaled the end of Britain's membership in Europe. The Brexit treaty is, if you like, a divorce agreement, and it looks now as if in several ways, including Northern Ireland, Britain is trying to wriggle out of the agreement that they've came to just around Christmas time, before the turn of the year. And the Biden administration is very distressed about this. It's contributing, as they say, as they did say very clearly, to unwanted tensions that are inflamed by the rhetoric of the Prime Minister himself. Boris Johnson is regarded as a major culprit here. However chummy those photo ops show the two families to be, the Bidens and the Johnsons, the newly married Johnsons, by the way, just before G7, along with their little child, Wilfred Johnson, on the beach. Those lovely pictures belied what is clearly an effort by Biden himself to get directly involved in the Irish question in particular. This is always a little complicated to go into, but Biden has made it clear that he's very much in favor of doing everything he possibly can as the President of the United States to maintain the peace agreement in Northern Ireland. And the Brexit deal has brought up new tensions about the border that is drawn across Ireland by the existence of Northern Ireland as a separate entity, and the degree of Northern Ireland's separateness is at the heart of all the argument that is going on now in Britain. And it's important to see that on the British side of this equation, it's important to note this, that it is a very serious matter. We should look at Johnson's side of this matter. The supporters that brought Johnson into power, and indeed, and this is all wrapped up in the same matter, and brought Brexit about, really. And Johnson is a Brexit Prime Minister. We must never forget that. He is the man who got elected on the idea that the very forcefully expressed idea that he would get Brexit done. That was his campaigning slogan. And his supporters, the people who wanted Britain out of Europe in the first place, and the people that he surrounded himself with in government, they're the people to watch here in many ways. And the British right-wing newspaper, The Telegraph, the Daily Telegraph and the Sunday Telegraph on the weekend, are where you hear the drum being banged most clearly. Telegraph columnists have been saying this week in reaction to Biden's intervention that Biden should, I want you to hear these quotes from the Brits, Biden should keep his sneering anti-British, anti-Brexit views to himself. And other more thoughtfully expressed articles are all about how the Brexit treaty is what they would call an unequal treaty negotiated when Britain had its time of weakness at Christmas before the turn of the year. It was an example of the classic form of unequal treaty that the imperial powers used to impose upon the Chinese in the 19th century, the sense that this was never a fair treaty in the first place, and we have to start renegotiating it now. And for one, the French Prime Minister has been saying very clearly overnight that this treaty is not up for renegotiation in any way at all. And that's the position of the United States administration under Biden, too. He wants no more stresses and strains put on the Irish border question, and he wants the UK to set, his word is settle settle this dispute with the EU, this ongoing dispute.
All right. Should we bring up our fanfare?
Yes, we have someone to celebrate in the media world.
All right.
Our fanfare this week goes to a radio program. It's the output of the Center for Investigative Reporting that's based in the Bay Area in the little town of Emeryville, nestling between Berkeley and Oakland. There's this little corridor in which this community often gets overlooked, but it's where the Center of Investigative Reporting established itself in the 1970s rather, and it's been doing some good work over the decades, and it's blossoming now. They make a program that's carried by many public radio stations called Reveal, and Reveal is a remarkable piece of work which I want to celebrate. Last week's episode, for example, is a really good example of them doing what they do best, which is trace stories very carefully and in great investigative detail. It was called Viral Lies, which is a pretty strong title, and essentially what it was doing was taking on the nose and dealing very directly with the wacky conspiracy. You'll know about it, I'm sure. Everybody does. The wacky conspiracy theory that Bill Gates is using COVID vaccines to implant in us all microchips, G5 chips to be precise, so that we can all be traced, tracked constantly. And one of the really impressive things about this broadcast and the journalistic work that went into it behind the story narrative, the detail that they managed to dig up and fill in, is that they were essentially doing some very assiduous contact tracing. How does a rumor get started? Who passes it first? Who develops it first? Who passes it on? Which direction does it go on? How does it become what this has become, which is an extraordinarily highly registering notion, especially amongst Republicans, especially among people in the South and in the Southwest? Just how did it gather force? I mean, they deal, you know, pretty briskly with the notion that it's an impossible notion anyway. Not only is it wacky, but it's just scientifically not possible to implant a chip by injecting a vein in the body with an immunization. What they did was demonstrate how, you know, for instance, I won't go into all the detail, that's not necessary, but how in one case a sermon by a clergyman of the kind of denomination you might expect to be doing this thing, making this ridiculous claim on a YouTube video, began the ball rolling. And as always in these matters, and it always interests me how these theories do get traction in the serious world, and there's usually a critical moment, of course, when there's a tipping point, when it enters the mainstream, as it were. And their very interesting work demonstrates very clearly, and it's an entirely credible operation, this entire broadcast. The vital link in the chain was when the New York Post, bless its heart, the Murdoch-owned tabloid newspaper here in my own hometown, decided to pick up the story. And that's where it took on its massive proportions, and I won't go into all the numbers, but you can see as they traced its progress that was how the mushrooming happened. And, you know, what's so important, I think, about this particular journalistic effort is that it's an exemplar of how we should deal with fake news. It's always a difficult question, you know, should we ignore this crazy rumor and just pay no attention because it doesn't deserve attention, or should we do something about it? Well, you reach the point sometimes when you have to do something about it, and it is important to, you know, get your facts straight and develop the journalistic argument against nonsense, and that's the way that sense, and I think it's ultimately the only way, only reliable way in which sense can ever possibly prevail again. So it's a fine example of good journalistic work, and I want to highly commend the people at Reveal.
You know, what's interesting about that theory is every American that has a cell phone in their pocket, unless they buy burner cell phones that they throw away, use once and throw away, every American can be traced simply by their cell phone that they have.
Yeah,
done.
We're all traceable.
Done. I mean,
pretty much all done. Traceable. Yeah.
Done.
That's true, and it just underlines the idiocy, yeah, of the notion that you know, we have to go to these extreme conspiracy theory notions to, you know, to indulge in you know what conspiracy theorists indulge in, which are these fantastical notions that there is some evil force at work planning and plotting ways to control the population, and straight out of sci-fi, of course. I mean, there are, as always, you know, there's the kernel of truth in it, and the kernel of truth is that we are traceable, but it doesn't have to go to the fantastical measures of implanting things in us through a mechanism which, of course, is incapable of doing such implanting, an immunization needle. But yeah, there's a thirst sometimes for that kind of sense that it's us against them, and the them are the privileged, the Bill Gateses of this world, and it smacks like nothing more than the kind of medieval rumors that prevailed during the Black Plague.
You know, it goes back to many, many years ago when one of the funny things that I heard when I was at a car dealership doing a broadcast once was that a mobster went in to buy a Cadillac Eldorado, okay? And they were explaining to him all the different options and that were in it. And this is when GM was introducing a thing called OnStar, where they could find out if you were in an accident, they'd check with you and stuff like that. Well, this guy did not said, okay, what other cars do you have like the Eldorado that don't have that? And they said, well, we have an Oldsmobile Toronado. This is how long ago it was. And he said, I'll take the Toronado. And they said, why? He said, because I don't want anybody being able to find me at any given moment in my car. But people don't realize we are wide open to this right now. I mean, everybody, with your smart TVs, with your telephones and everything, if somebody wants to track you, folks, they can already do it already. They don't have to go through the expense of injecting it in your arm.
And your history menu on your GPS navigation system in your car will do it for you a lot more easily. Yeah, that's true.
Now, very quickly before we go, there's a group of 10 Democrat and Republican senators. This is significant. They've come together and reached a deal on a $1.2 trillion infrastructure package, which now only is about, about $400 million away from where Biden's 1.7.
Hovering around the $1 trillion mark. And it's, it's an interesting... It was a side channel to begin with, separate from Biden's own direct negotiations with the congressional Republicans. A sidekick to Mitch McConnell was the designated negotiator, and that hasn't gone well. It looked like it might go well at one point, but then it hasn't. But now its place is being taken by this direct Republican-Democratic congressional agreement, this gang of 10, five Democrats and five Republicans, Mitt Romney at the head of it, interesting name from to be conjuring with since his own presidential run and his reappearance as the voice of the remaining sensible part, if you like, of the New Republican Party since January 6th, and his clear statements about that. But this deal done within the portals of the Capitol building may have a better chance, and I wouldn't be at all surprised if the administration buys into it, because, as you say, it doesn't fall far short. I mean, we're talking astronomical numbers here, so it's a lot of money short, but proportionally speaking, it's not that far short of what Biden was proposing in the first place. So this one could have legs, as they say.
All right. David, it's always great to speak with you. Have a great weekend, and we'll check with you next week.
Look forward to that.
David Tarachuk with the Media Beat here on Robin Hood Radio. You can always hear David at robinhoodradio.com. Click on demand. Click on David Tarachuk, the Media Beat.